When I registered to vote, I had just finished my second year in law school. And during the second year in law school, I had taken a full year's course in constitutional law. And I went to register to vote, and the board of registrars, there were three people on the boards of registrars at that time, and the registrar that came to me asked me to interpret the 14th Amendment of the Constitution. That was a part of the literacy test that they would apply to people who came to register to vote. Well, I just finished taking a year's course in constitutional law in law school. And so when that question was asked of me to interpret the 14th Amendment, it took me an hour and a half to interpret the 14th Amendment because I related all of the cases that had been decided by the United States Supreme Court since 1868, when the 14th Amendment was adopted, until 1957. And the woman who asked me the question was utterly amazed. And she said, "How do you know so much?" And I said, "Well, I just finished the second year in law school, and I took the constitutional law course." And she just could not understand that I knew so much. And in her attempt to try to keep me from becoming a registered voter, she asked me the question, "Well, then, if you know so much, who's the only woman in the United States Senate?" And I said, "Her name is Margaret Chase Smith, and she's a senator from the state of Maine." And the lady, in her disgust and knowing that she could not win a case against me if I had forced the court to require me to be registered as a voter, said, "Well, just let the nigger vote." Does that answer your question?
Yes, sir. What were some of the events you witnessed during the Civil Rights Movement?
Well, fortunately, my office during the Civil Rights Movement was situated in the Masonic Temple Building that's located on the corner of 17th Street and 4th Avenue North. And where my office was located within the building, I could see from my windows on the side over into Kelly Ingram Park that was adjacent to the 16th Street Baptist Church. And the 16th Street Baptist Church was the meeting place for the movement and was the staging ground for most of the marches that occurred in downtown Birmingham. The purpose of the marches was to go and show numbers of people that were opposed to the segregation laws in the city of Birmingham. And the laws that the civil rights movement primarily enacted themselves against or showed themselves against were those laws that forbade blacks from eating at lunch counters and dining rooms in department stores in downtown Birmingham. Blacks composed a great number of the citizenry of Birmingham, and their buying power was essential toward the health and life of the department stores. And so the movement organizer, Dr. King, and his associates knew that if we had selective buying campaigns known as boycotts against the department stores and would not buy their merchandise, that the owners of the stores would take action themselves to attempt to have the laws changed. Well, first the selective buying campaigns came out, and picketers would come down and they would boycott the stores, and blacks would not go into the stores. They would not buy the merchandise of the department store owners, and that would spell total anathema to the department store owners because they couldn't sell their merchandise. They couldn't earn a living. So the boycotts were the first of the selective buying techniques that were employed. And at that point, the owners of the stores began to cooperate and say, "Let's get rid of these laws because we can't stay in business unless black people purchase the goods." Well, blacks did not want just the right to go in and select merchandise and go into the fitting rooms and try the clothing on before they purchased it. But they also wanted to be able to go to the lunch counters and eat if they were there. They wanted to be able to go into the toilets and use the toilets while they were shopping for merchandise in those stores. And so because those toilets were segregated and because the merchants did not want the people to use the waiting rooms, and it really wasn't the merchants, it was the general public that complying with the segregation laws would not allow us to go in to try on clothes. So in addition to the boycotts, people then began to demonstrate and show their disapproval of the laws that segregated lunch counters. You couldn't buy a hot dog at the lunch counter. You couldn't sit down and drink a soft drink. You couldn't get a glass of water. You couldn't go into the fitting rooms when you purchased the clothing. So by having protest against that, the merchants say, I can't stay in business against it. So I watched those marches leave the 16th Street Baptist Church, and I saw them go down into downtown Birmingham, and in many instances they were arrested. I was a part of a grouping that handled the bonds to get people out on bonds when they protested against those unjust laws. And I also saw people that were hosed, the water hoses, by the fire department. I saw the dogs being placed on people, and that was so inhuman to do that. But I also know that those dogs didn't last very long, because even though it was a nonviolent movement, the dogs would suddenly disappear, and that cadre of dogs that they brought about City of Birmingham Police Department had those dogs, but those dogs didn't last, and they were done away with surreptitiously by people, and the water hoses didn't last, because when that was shown on television and the world saw how inhuman the police were treating the demonstrators, that public opinion just demanded that this be changed. So not only did public opinion bring itself to bear on getting rid of the segregation laws, the selective buying programs got rid of it, and the third thing that occurred here was the change in the form of government. Heretofore, there had been a three-man government. It was a city commission. And Bull Connor, who is the infamous police commissioner during this period of time, who was the arch villain in the maintaining of the civil rights, I mean, I'm sorry, the segregation laws, was put out of office. And so a mayor council was formed. And a couple of years, or maybe a year after the mayor council form was put into effect, Arthur Shores, who was a black attorney, was elected to the city council and ultimately became the president of the city council. And Bessie Estelle, who had been an elementary school teacher and then a principal, became the second black on the city council. And so there were then seven whites and two blacks, and it has now evolved to the point where the majority of the members on the city council are black people, and the mayor of the city of Birmingham are black. So yes, I saw all of that, and I saw it change from where blacks only held jobs that were of the most menial nature, as janitors and elevator operators, to the point where we have people that are of Afro-American extract that are heads of departments. The head of the Department of Land Use and Engineering is a black man who has 3 degrees from Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, one of the most noted schools in the country. And the chief of police is a black man, and as I've said, the mayor's a black. And so the department heads are almost evenly divided among whites and blacks, and jobs in their technical jobs and clerical jobs and other skilled jobs and semi-skilled jobs are held by blacks just as there are whites. And when I first started practicing law, there were no black policemen. Now the chief of police is black, and I would guess the majority of the police department is black, because the population of the city of Birmingham is majority black, because whites have fled the city of Birmingham and have moved into the southern suburbs and the northern suburbs, where you don't have the same mix of in many of those towns, you don't have the same mix as you do in the city of Birmingham.
Okay. Do you remember the bombing of the 16th Street Baptist Church?
Yes, I do, because I was teaching a Sunday school class. I was teaching the adult Sunday school class at our church that's located on North Smith, in North Smithfield, the area where the initial bombings took place because of residential housing desegregation. And I remember that morning I was teaching the class, and not only could we hear the bomb, we could feel the bomb, because you could feel the seismic trembling of the earth as a result of the bomb. And then someone called our church and told us that the 16th Street Baptist Church had been bombed, and the young women had been killed as a result of the bomb. I remember it very vividly. Plus, our funeral home, our family business, handled the bodies of two of the young people that were killed. And so I knew the parents of two of the children very well. In fact, I knew the parents of three of the children very well. And our company handled the funeral arrangements for those children. And I went down to the 16th Street Baptist Church and walked through the police cordon, and I was able to see the church in its destroyed state. And because it was right across the park from where the building was located, where my office was located, I could see that church every day. And one of my clients, the Gaylord Construction Company, was the company that did the work to restore the church, to rebuild that church. And that was a very famous church even before the bombing, because it was one of the oldest of the black Baptist churches in the city of Birmingham. Located in a very lovely building that had been, architecturally had been the architectural work had been done by a black architect, and the construction of the church was done by a black contractor, and the restoration work was done by a black contractor. So I was close to that, and I knew that all of the events had transpired, because I had participated in participated in many of the mass meetings that were held in the 16th Street Baptist Church.
How did that bombing affect the people, the black people?
Well, not only did it have a devastating effect on blacks, it had a devastating effect on whites.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it had a devastating effect on people worldwide, because that bombing was probably an act of the lowest form of human life.
Mm-hmm.
When someone would set a bomb as that man did, and cause the deaths of those young people, and other people were injured, and the traumatic effect emotionally and psychologically was just unbelievable. There were people that had been members of that church for all of their lives that would not go back to church there because of their fear that their children would be harmed or they would be harmed. And they are members of our church today, First Congregational Church today, who traced their membership back to the 16th Street Baptist Church. And they came to our church to become members because of that bombing and are still members today.